All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Thursday, September 8th. I am Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis, your best friend.
Oh, you are my best friend, buddy, and business partner.
I was talking to the audience. I'm sorry.
Oh.
I was addressing the audience. I'm their best friend.
Buddy, Thursday football, it feels like we've been running up this runway for a while, getting ready. It's finally here. Football starts tonight. In a game that's really not that interesting, but whatever. It's football is back. Excited, one to excited. How excited are you?
Max.
Bananas. Yeah, that's interesting. I always do that one to what. My big thing is like the one to, and then like some kind of feeling.
It's a laugh like 25% of the time.
That's all I actually need. That laugh percentage for me is totally fine. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, and obviously we are here to help you get started with FanDuel and DraftKings, in this case NFL, but we do MLB, NHL, NBA, really all the sports you need covered. You head over to the site right now. There is still time to get a hold of our, what's going to be now, 4-day free trial that'll take you through Sunday NFL with our projections for FanDuel and DraftKings, and also access to our player lab that the users are really just going bananas for in terms of its functionality and what it allows you to do, searching through different football queries, different football filters to put together lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. You go over, you get, you know, dfsr.com/lab. The free trial ends Sunday, $29.95 a month after that, and that includes subscriptions to all sports that we offer at the time. So one monthly subscription gets you covered for really just anything we're offering right now. It's baseball, football, NBA coming real soon.
All right. I hate to brag, but I have to insert this. One user said that he was making some lineups for DraftKings, put him in. Right now, he could win up to over $1 million. Just right now, that's how much he could win right now.
So, that's unbelievable.
As of Thursday, he's still in the running to win $1 million based on the lineups he's submitted so far.
That time of year where hope springs eternal. It's my absolute favorite time when DraftKings shows you your potential winnings. It's like, it's, you know, seeing the Powerball lottery up on the board. That has to do with the $1 million tournament, but we're going to help you get started with some cash game talk today. Our main picks article went up on the site yesterday where we broke down about, you know, 3 to 4 players per position that you can start to look at in cash games. A lot of these guys, if you've been reading and, you know, even if you do full season fantasy, there's a lot of just kind of things that translate over from that. So some of these guys aren't going to come as total surprises, but we wanted to just start this podcast by breaking down who we thought the stronger cash game plays were this week. And then on Friday, we'll be back doing a more of a game by game breakdown with some tournament flyers that you can kind of take hold of. So that's where we'll get started today. Let's start with quarterback. The talk is mostly about Dak. Do you think Dak Prescott, if you don't know who I'm talking about, do you see him as the highest owned player on the slate, the highest owned quarterback? Do you think that the hype train has got out of control? Where do you stand on Dak right now? He was, I think, the first or second guy we wrote up in the picks.
Whoa, we're jumping right in. Okay. It feels a little bit like, you know, we're out having a nice dinner. You offer to buy me an appetizer, and then all of a sudden you want to take me back to your place. But we can do that if you're ready, if that's what the people want.
I would never take you out to dinner. So that analogy doesn't even work just from the very first part of it, much less the rest of it. But go ahead.
You've taken me out for dinner many times. Moving on. Just as friends, moving on. So the Dak question really is fundamental. I mean, you and I probably spent how long? Like 3 hours off air?
Probably at least.
Just trying to go down and figure out what the appropriate way to project him for week one is, because it's a really unusual situation. I mean, it's not often that a player moves into such a high volume role in such a productive offense with so much uncertainty around it. So, you know, Prescott, we talked about this on our quarterback primer, I think, earlier this season, but for those of you who are unaware, didn't listen or whatever, you know, legit college prospect, wasn't taken very highly in the draft because a lot of people didn't see kind of his core skills translating to the NFL as well as someone like, say, Carson Wentz. But very interestingly, he was extremely, you know, persistent and consistent in the preseason there, very efficient, and he can run, so that gives him an increased floor that a lot of new quarterbacks don't have. We've seen running based quarterbacks do decently in their first years in the past. He's obviously got some good offensive weapons, so the real question is going to be, you know, is he going to make value on 5,000 as opposed to the big money quarterback? So that's kind of the overall view. We went back and forth a bunch. Do you want to weigh in on the pro-Dak side to start?
Well, the pro-Dak side, which you've mentioned in the podcast before, is the pro-Dak side, that's hard to say, is that he is gifted the pieces that you need for success as a quarterback in terms of both his, I guess you would say, his skill set slash the play. And it's really actually more about the personnel around him. And the Cowboys just have that personnel in the wide receiver. I mean, they have a wide receiver core, I guess you could say, but, I mean, led by Dez, but Terrence Williams, not bad either, with Witten as an outlet. And then you have a running game with a great offensive line. And it's really just a price thing. So it's those three things combined with his price that make him, that's the pro side for him, I think, is that he just doesn't need to do, this game can go a lot of different ways that he can easily hit value on the price that he has. And it's also like just not a binary decision. Like, it's not Dak versus Russell Wilson. It's Dak plus whatever else you get because of how much you save on him. And so that, I think, is the pro Dak side. I know you had a down, you had a negative Dak, more of a negative view of it. I mean, not a negative. I think we're on the same page that he is a play. It was just about how much it was like a, it wasn't like a LOCK lock for him.
It's a complicated piece of math because, you know, unlike, I mean, each position needs to be analyzed on its own. And that's why we covered that in our free ebook and our positional primers. But quarterbacks are not running backs, right? So on one end of the spectrum, running backs, you can plug in Spencer Ware in Kansas City and reasonably expect that he's going to replicate some percentage of Jamaal Charles's production just based on what Kansas City is trying to do with the ball. You know, like, they're going to pass to their running backs. They're not going to be aggressive downfield. So somebody's got to be handed the ball. It looks like it's going to be him. So you can say, okay, even if he gets 75% of Jamaal Charles's production, he's a play. Quarterback, it's not really like that, you know? Like, I mean, we saw Matt Castle, for instance, fill in on the heyday Patriots when Brady missed a season after hurting his knee, and he wasn't, you know, a big percentage of what Tom Brady was, you know? And is Prescott, does he need to be as good as Matt Castle was in New England to fit that bill? Probably not, but it's just such an unknown. It's such a complicated piece of analysis based on a player who's just never taken an NFL snap in a real game. So the con side on Dak, frankly, it's not, can't be just looked at as him as a standalone. It's just him comparing him to other options for the week and, you know, all the pieces that need to move around, which is just what makes this so confusing, I think.
Yeah.
Because obviously the nice thing about Dak is that you're going to play him and you can get some value at running back as well and then play like every expensive receiver. And that feels pretty attractive, you know?
Right.
So yeah, he just can't be analyzed in a vacuum, and that's what makes it so tough.
And I think that's where we are now. I think that we would agree that he has value. We'd agree. There's also value in cash games. There's value in being on the chalk side of things, especially in a case like this. Because, again, things would need to go horribly wrong for him to not produce something at this price, right? Like, it would need to be a really just some kind of terrible game for him to not, considering how much he's going to be on the field, considering the line is still one of the higher over-unders on the week and really didn't shift too much down for the Cowboys when Romo was out. You know, the Cowboys are still expected to put up points. I just think that you're just going to see him. It's hard to know exactly what the ownership percentages are going to be. He's definitely probably the most talked about value play going into this week among just, you know, the DFS community. So it's not something that sneak up on anybody. I think that there's value in that you're not going to be too far. Like, you're not going to get killed if he's bad also because his ownership percentage will be too high. So I think...
Well, right. You're going to basically, by playing Dak, what you're saying is, let's just play with eight players this week instead of nine, right? Like, that's kind of what you're saying. Like, since everyone's going to be playing him anyway, or at least a lot of people, or at least a lot of sharps are going to be playing him, then you don't have to... You're not sticking your neck out there on a $5,000 play.
No.
And I think that's right. And I mean, so to kind of go down in a little bit deeper, right? So Prescott at 5,000, if he goes out there and gets 250 passing yards, throws an interception and runs for 20 yards, that would be 12 fantasy points. That would be around a 2.4 points per dollar multiplier, which our projection system would have him as strictly league average for the week.
Right.
That's not going to kill you. And it's not hard to imagine him going 250 yards with a pick and 20 yards rushing, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think if you feel like that's the baseline and you feel like his baseline is league average, then maybe he is just the safest play of the week. I'm prepared to hear that for sure. I guess to get deeper into the con side. So when Romo got hurt, the Cowboys line, their implied total immediately went from around 26.25 down to 23. That's per Fantasy Labs NFL data. That's a pretty significant drop. That's people saying this guy's going to be significantly worse. That's going to be a big detriment to the offense. Now, the line was already quite good. The Giants were a very, very bad defense last season, and you know, the type of defense that shouldn't be too punishing on a young quarterback. Because I think part of the risk in taking a really young quarterback is that they just get absolutely destroyed and it becomes embarrassing and the team pulls them for their own safety in the second half. The Giants aren't that kind of defense. So blessedly, we didn't get them against, like, you know, a much tougher but maybe not spectacular defense like, say, Carolina or someone like that. So that's a good sign for him. But I think on the other side, you also have, like, we were looking at this, and I think my main argument on the con side was, sure, Prescott is against a team that allowed the second most fantasy points to opposing QBs last season, but sandwiched around him were Rodgers at he was third. Rodgers at the facing Jacksonville, who allowed the second most points, and Russell Wilson against Miami, who allowed the fourth most points. So,
right.
For me, it's going to be either Prescott or Rodgers and Wilson in those cash game spots. And I think that's really where it gets tricky, right? Because, yeah, going Prescott and, you know, Julio Jones versus going Rodgers and a cheap wide receiver, I don't know. But yeah, so should we talk about the case for Rodgers and Wilson if you wanted to go in that direction?
Yeah, and we will. And one more thing about just our projections too. Like, our projections aren't just, like, based on, like, this isn't like a name thing. Like, we've factored into the Giants what they did against teams last year. We've factored in the Giants' pace last year, which which was a contributing factor to, you know, what other quarterbacks were allowed to do. The Giants pass a ton, and therefore they allow a lot of other plays for their team. Like, there's a, like, Carson Wentz is also 5,000. There's a reason we're not talking about him. It's because he's just not in anywhere close to the same situation. It would actually be close. If you switched Wentz and Prescott's matchup in our system, like if Wentz was going against Giants and Dak was going against Cleveland, that actually might flip-flop their projections, to be honest with you, because the Giants do matter that much as far as the way we're looking at things. And
So
that is just another piece of it to factor in. It's not just completely a Dak thing. It has a lot to do with this matchup too, and just how much we think he's just – how many plays we think the Cowboys are stand to run in this game, which is going to be more than Philadelphia against the Browns, frankly.
Yeah, that's fair. The Giants last season had the second highest. One of the advanced stats we use in our player lab is the opponent's pace. So this is comparable to the NBA pace stat in that we're trying to project just how many plays the opposing team will give them in a given game. The Giants last season allowed 69 offensive plays for the other team per game, second highest in the league. So definitely another big point in the Prescott's favor. I am going to turn it over to the Rodgers and Wilson side of the ball now. Very interestingly, we oftentimes in football have to try and control for variables that are difficult to control for. In this case, we actually don't need to a ton simply because Rodgers and Wilson also both just have tremendous matchups. So really what we're controlling for here is actually just kind of raw points per dollar production. So when we break down, and especially if we're trying to analyze something as ambiguous as safety, right? I mean, that's it's a term that's thrown around a lot in the DFS space, and I think a lot of people sort of have a misunderstanding of what that means. The case for Rodgers and Wilson is that quarterback tends to be, on a points per dollar basis, one of the safer positions in the NFL, has the lowest coefficient of variation, which essentially means that players tend to replicate their performances a lot more readily at the quarterback position than they do elsewhere. So to that end, it's very attractive to want to spend the lion's share of your money at the safest position for a format like a double up or a 50-50. And furthermore, Rodgers and, well, I'll talk about Wilson first. Wilson in particular is a guy who completes 68% of his passes, had the better than 4-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio last season, and uses his legs, one of the best rushing quarterbacks in the leagues as well. You throw in the fantastic matchup there, and it's pretty tough to see how either Wilson or Prescott, frankly, wind up killing you week one. So I think when we were talking, I was just kind of looking at it like, should we just get 4,000 more in at the quarterback position or 3,500 more on FanDuel in and just kind of lock up that additional safety for 3,500 more? So
it's close. It's very close for us. It's not a landslide victory for Dak in our system. It just isn't. Like, Wilson and Rodgers come in very close. The problem is, and it's like I said before, and I'll actually reference the coefficient variation piece, the CV for quarterbacks is by far the lowest. Where it also is low is basically across the running back position. That's kind of, they all kind of exist in the same plane with each other. But then also in the very top of wide receivers that have sort of the same coefficient variation.
Define very top.
Top six or top 15. It was no more than 15. I don't have the number exactly in front of me. But
yeah,
there was a drop off somewhere around that number. But the top 15 or so wide receivers had that same built-in safety. And because there's so few of those guys, whereas like the quarterback didn't really change as it went down the list. Like they all were kind of the same and they were all just going to do what they were going to do. But the wide receivers didn't. And so when you have a chance to pay up for, in this case with Dak, three of those guys, that is where that is the case, because you can't. So basically the difference for our system is something like Wilson. Forget the running backs for a second. We'll get to that in a minute because these guys all kind of end up being the same. But the difference in our system was kind of like Wilson and say like Doug Baldwin or Amari Cooper or Dak and DeAndre Hopkins. That's not exactly what it was, but it was very close to some kind of combination of that, right? And when we look at it, like Hopkins is just in a significant tier above in terms of safety of than a guy like Doug Baldwin or Amari Cooper.
What makes him qualify that statement? What makes him so much?
Because he's such a heavy targeted guy. Like, because his target's just totally just not, don't crush those two other guys, but you know they're 15 to 20% higher than Cooper or Baldwin. I'm just using those as examples. So that is where his quote unquote safety comes from. That's where he tends not to deviate as much because the Texans are just incentivized to continue looking his way over and over and over again because he's an elite. He's like, you know, a transcendent talent. So that's kind of where we fall with Wilson. And like I said, it's close. It's really close. I can honestly see a scenario where, especially for week one of all weeks, where I don't think you need to just die on one hill of a guy because there are ways for that to go wrong where you just don't have enough information. Football, you never probably have enough information, or maybe by the time the season's over you do, but then it's just too late. But week one is the week where if any week I could see you spreading things around just a little bit in terms of maybe your quarterback play or that third wide receiver, this would probably be the way to do it. And I still think you come out on top because there is a group at the top and there's really not much else below that. It's just sort of those pieces shifting around, two of them being Wilson and Dak, and then Aaron Rodgers also.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very fine case. I think you mentioned this earlier, but Julio Jones, Antonio Brown, and DeAndre Hopkins are coming in the optimal lineup right now if you compare them with Dak. And that is just those three guys in and of themselves were in a tier completely alone when it came to targets last season. So Jones led the NFL with 204. Brown was second with 195. Hopkins was third with 192. Right. Then you have to go 16 targets down, so almost fully 10% down to Demaryius Thomas. And then, you know, you can just start hearing the names for your earball test there, eardrum test maybe, down to Brandon Marshall, Jarvis Landry, Allen Robinson, Odell Beckham. It's you're doing something totally different when you play Julio Jones, Brown, and Hopkins at the wide receiver position. It's just not going to be the second half, and those guys haven't been targeted any times yet. Versus, like, if you decide, I mean, heaven forbid, no one should go cheap at wide receiver this week. It's just not the week to do it.
Not on FanDuel. I'm talking different on DraftKings, where the pricing is a little tighter on DraftKings this week, and it's not. Even with some of the value that you're getting out there, you still are going to need. You simply cannot roster all the most expensive guys like you can sort of on FanDuel. But so DraftKings is a slightly different story, which we'll get to when we talk maybe more punt play. Let's go into the running back situation because for me and for our system, we've really honed in on about 3 to 4 guys total that I'm just going to sort of mix and match with. I don't see us getting away. Talk a little bit about where we're going to land here with the running backs.
Sure. This is another source of debate in the DFSR offices here because I think there are actually quite a few pretty good options this week. And I think you're right that we're zeroing in on a couple for cash games, but I think it's a wider net than maybe some people realize. So I think at the top of our list, kind of in an undisputed fashion, is Spencer Ware. Spencer Ware is going to be taking over the workload from Jamaal Charles this week. And really the major concern with him that we had was, you know, how he was going to fit into the passing game in the absence of Charles. Historically, Ware hasn't caught a lot of balls out of the backfield, and we were going to go, you know, make him a first two down back and go in a different direction on third down or how that was going to work exactly. And I hate to use the preseason as an example here, but the 6 targets in the final preseason game were tremendously reassuring for us, I think, in that, you know, it just certainly seems like they're going to kind of try to slot him into the Jamaal Charles role. And, you know, frankly, this is a rich man's problem anyway, because at 5,400 on FanDuel, and I think, was he 3,000 on DraftKings, 4,400 on DraftKings, they're giving him away, you know, starting running back in a team that's proven it can run the ball and proven it wants to run the ball, and especially in the red zone. So for me, he's like the clear – he's sort of in a tier by himself, yes, especially because he also enables and unlocks the triple threat at wide receiver. Or if you want to go expensive at quarterback, he unlocks that too. So so for me, he's, you know, a cut above the rest, and it's really not especially close for me. Are you on the same page here?
Yeah, yeah. No, he's lock and load time. No question about it. You don't get this kind of safety from running back at this price, and the Chiefs have been pretty clear about what they'll do when Charles isn't around, when there isn't like tons to play. Like, so when they, especially when they think he's coming back, which I think it was a point you had made early in the season, like when their goals are not to just kind of get out of the season with all bodies accounted for, this is a case, yep, where they believe Charles is going to be back. So it's not the biggest deal in the world to run Ware,
yeah,
a little.
Don't kill yourself, buddy.
Good exactly. Exactly. They don't need to, they're not saving Ware at this point. They're saving Charles. Right. So like, I don't see a problem with his volume even in the slightest. And at 4,400 on DraftKings, both sites, it's easy. 44, he'll be the chalk play at running back. I presume he will be. The only thing that could throw that off a little bit is because you save on Prescott, and I'm just not exactly sure where people plan on spending up elsewhere. So, but right. I mean, for us, it's lock and load time on Ware, no doubt about it.
Well, and I think that, I mean, a direction that people are going to go this week, almost without question, is going to be with Christian Michael. With Thomas Rawls, you know, the news out of Seattle camp has been very, very kind of tricky to parse. You know, there's been a lot of kind of cloak and dagger. We're going to look after Rawls, and we're not sure how many carries he's going to get. He definitely won't start, but we hope he'll start by like week three. I wouldn't be shocked at all if Christian Michael just moves into that role altogether, and then you might wind in a position where you're going to play both, but I think for a lot of people, they're going to kind of be deciding between the two. Right now, Spencer Ware to me feels a little bit safer, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if we get more definitive news out of Seattle, if Michael slots right into that, you know, RB2 slot alongside him, and we get the opportunity to spend up somewhere else. Although we're sort of running out of spots to spend up because we already have two $5,000 players on the team. So
there's a little more news for Seattle where they have, now they're saying Rawls is going to be on a snap count, 4 to 6 carries. That is probably enough to just not put Michael totally in the discussion. So like,
I disagree with that. I mean, you don't think that Spencer Ware's backup is going to get 4 to 6 carries?
No, I don't think so.
Guarantee it. Put it on the board or something. What are you supposed to do when you disagree on a podcast?
I don't know. Maybe. That for some reason that strikes me as just enough to be wary about Michael. So I just don't put Ware and Michael in the same sort of safe category together. That's all. I think Michael's a fine play. It just doesn't. I would much rather play Ware in this situation.
Yeah, I guess I don't disagree that I think Ware is better. I think the same category thing is hyperbole from my perspective. I mean, last year the Chiefs played the Texans final game in the wild card round. Ware was the starter. He got 16 carries. Trekendrick West had 8. Nile Davis had 4. Albert Wilson had 2. You know, like they're, I mean, that was a blowout too. So who knows if that was really their plan all along. But I don't think there's any question that there will be another running back who gets 4 carries on the Chiefs this week. So I don't think the Rawls thing is really, really too worrisome. And in fact, that buoys my case for Michael. So I might wind up playing both. That said, if I don't, there's another cluster of running backs in the 6,600 to 7,600 range on FanDuel that we should probably dive into. And I think that there's some interesting discussions to be had here. So you don't want to jump in on those?
Yeah, we've kind of gone back and forth with this about basically the guys that we're discussing here are Lamar Miller, D'Angelo Williams, and I guess you can throw like Latavius Murray into that group. Murray is a lot more enticing on DraftKings, where he is, I think, like 2,000 less.
5,600.
Yes. So it's not exactly the same kind of discussion over on DraftKings, but on FanDuel, we've gone back and forth about where to project. So when you're looking at season longs, this is where we really get down to brass tacks, because when you're looking at season long, if you have Lamar Miller on your team, you are not questioning whether or not you are starting Lamar Miller, right?
Correct.
Like it doesn't matter if he's getting 15 carries or 20 carries. No one on your bench is getting as many. So it doesn't, like, now at that point, you're just kind of, now at this point, you're just kind of hoping. Where we need to really make the decisions is, what is Lamar Miller? Like, what is it actually going to be, right? Like, because it really, really matters at this point. I wouldn't say disagreed. We've had some debate about where or not, what, how to project guys like Williams and Miller. I don't think we're too, I don't think we have too many disagreements on where to project Williams, because we have historical records of sort of what happens with him when Le'Veon Bell doesn't play. With Miller, it's new. Tell me what your reservations are with Miller, and then I can probably – and I'll go the other way, because this is where we're just not maybe – this is where we're feeling not the most confident as maybe some other outfits in the industry are about
it. Yeah, we had a modestly awkward disagreement about this before the podcast started, say, which I think leads us into our brand new segment that we love to do these days, and that's the No Halftime Challenge. So if you don't know what No Halftime is, No Halftime is a brand new DFS site. Well, new this year, and they offer a really innovative product where they allow you to essentially play a one-game DFS contest, or a one-player, rather, DFS contest against someone else. So the way it works is you install the app from nohalftime.com. You can use promo code DFSR25 and get a 100% bonus up to $25. And what you're allowed to do is you can look around for challenges. Like, some fool out there might think that Lamar Murray is going to be better than D'Angelo Williams this week. Lamar Murray?
That's, I was going to say, well, that, I would take Williams there because I don't know anyone.
You'll take the Williams on that side of the equation. Fourth string practice squad guy for the Giants.
Well, Latavius Murray. There's two LMs. I see where you went wrong. It's okay. Keep going.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. All right, moving on. So what you do is you can look around for challenges that other players have issued, or you can issue a challenge yourself. You know, you might think that maybe there are players out there who aren't as up on Spencer Ware this week, and they're going to like someone who you think is going to be quite a bit worse, like, you know, Justin Forsett or somebody, but a name they recognize. And so you can issue a challenge for any amount of money, and then other people will accept it. And whoever gets the most fantasy points gets the prize pool at the end. So very straightforward, super easy to use. Doug and I both use nohalftime.com. And again, if you sign up with promo code DFSR25, you can get started. So my No Halftime Challenge, Doug, that I'm going to issue you this week. There's no drum roll sound effect yet. That's coming in the next release of the podcast.
I'll probably figure out how to do that in here. But yeah.
I'm taking D'Angelo Williams straight up against Lamar Miller.
Yeah, so I'm going to take Miller. And like you mentioned, an awkward conversation we had in here. It's only awkward because you and I, we tend to agree on a lot of different stuff.
Mostly we just agree because we trust math to solve these problems for
right.
us.
Right. But the problem here is that the math comes down to our opinion, right? So like this is where the disagreement for us comes, is that this is the only last piece of the math is what we think that volume is going to be. So the case for Miller is, well, okay, the case for Miller in my point of view is that the Houston has some historical, you know, track record of what they do when they have, I guess, what they would deem to be a running back one on their squad, right? And I'm not talking when Chris Polk is getting the majority of the carries. I'm talking about,
why not? Why isn't he a running back one in your mind when he's the main guy getting the carries?
I guess I see Polk more as just we're down to our few last men standing, and he's more of a fullback type. And I don't know the exact, maybe I'm doing a bad job by using that as an example, but we have seen where they have guys like Arian Foster and Alfred Blue, who they would turn loose for 20 plus carries a game. They bring in Miller to basically be that guy on their offense now. And that is where, you know, we had him projected for somewhere in that 15 to 16 category carries, which I think is being conservative. You don't think that's being conservative. It's close.
Well, yeah, not only do I not think that, I mean, I think the math backs it up. There were only four times last season where a Texans running back had 20 or more carries in a game. I think that, you know, they had like the epic game where Alfred Blue had 31 carries that first game that Foster was out. I think that sticks really heavily in people's mind. You know, Blue had a decent amount of touches later in the season, but I mean, if you go up and down that log, after Foster got hurt, and now one thing is they did use both of those backs out of the backfield in the passing game to some degree, so sometimes there were more touches than that, but you know, you had 14 carries, 12 carries, 21, 16, 20, 15, 21, 17, I don't know, it kind of bounced around quite a bit for Blue. Foster did have a lot of touches, but not a ton of carries, so I mean, you know, Lamar Miller, his status as a pass-catching back in Texas is sort of unknown to me. Like, I don't know what exactly their plans are there. I don't know. I don't want to step on the thing, but I don't know that you can look at Texas and say, or Houston and say, yeah, they're definitely a team that's going to put a guy out there for 25 carries a game.
Yeah, and maybe this is reading the tea leaves on it too, because you know they bring that guy in for a reason. They pay him money. Teams aren't usually or smart teams at least don't usually go out and spend free agent dollars on a running back because these guys are sort of replaceable. They did that with Miller. I think that's where I still think we're probably in the fair range on targets and carries for him going into this week. The other piece for him that it really
what helped, do we have him projected at right now?
16 and a half carries and
So yeah, we're still to disagree with myself for a second. There were a lot more times where the running backs had more than 16 and a half touches over the course of the
season. Right, we have
them
16
and
a half.
More than half the games. Yep.
16 and a half carries and something like 2.5 targets or something like that, which I think that seems like a fair to maybe low projection for him. He also gets a big-time bump. The Bears were so bad against the run last year. The Texans come in as the second highest favorite on the slate, which we saw helps for, we believe it helps for at least running back big games. Like more times a running, it appears to be that a running back is in a better situation when his team comes in as a heavier favorite than a heavier dog. So he gets that little piece in his favor. Bears play at a fine-ish pace. There's a lot of contextual factors that line up for Miller that are also helping his projection, where we have him for like 3 to 3.5 less carries than D'Angelo Williams, and he's still outpacing him in terms of our projections.
Okay, so I'm going to give you the Williams side now. First of all, Steelers just flat out projected to score more points this week, so always a good place to begin. Second of all, I'll go down Williams when he was a starter last season, the amount of touches he got per game. So he went 22, 24, 29, 18, 15 in a blow or a loss to Seattle where they were trailing. So that was too bad. Then 31 touches, 25 touches, 19, 23. So that's just so many touches. He just touches the ball all the time. And the difference, I think, between Miller and Williams is Williams returns to the same team with the exact same personnel. And we just know what they want to do. It was essentially matchup independent what was going on with him last season, with extreme upside in good matchups. So I don't know. I think when you're looking at the two and you're just talking straight up safety, I mean, Williams, 500 cheaper on FanDuel. And I don't see how you can possibly project him for fewer touches than Lamar Miller. I know that we're not doing that in our system, but
no, we're not.
For the people that are out there. It comes down to that for me. Like, it's just a known quantity, known situation. We know exactly what the Steelers like to do. And I don't feel the need personally to go out on a limb week one and grab Miller in a brand new situation because he's like a shiny new object. I know I'm not implying that that's why you do, but I feel like a lot of the insane enthusiasm around him this season is just that something new to talk about thing, and I want to be hesitant to fall into that trap.
Yeah, that doesn't fall into that same category for me, and I know what you're talking about, like the something new to talk about thing. For instance, like Ezekiel Elliott falls into that category for me. That is sort of like the guy that we could really see just not live up to some early games hype. Elliott is a guy that strikes me as that. That strikes me as like the shiny new toy. I don't think, for some reason, Miller is not in that same category to me. Just so everyone's aware, as of right now, we have Miller, I'm just looking at it exactly, we have Miller projected for 19 or so touches, and we have Williams projected for 23. So we have Williams projected for significantly more. that's a not insignificant amount of number difference.
That's a ton.
Yeah,
that's a lot.
And so I don't think it's not like we're coming. It's not like we're calling them the same. It's just that Williams does. Yes, they have a higher over under. Excuse me, higher total over under. Though when you account for the spread in there, their implied totals aren't so different than each other. The Steelers and the Texans. So it's close. This is where I can see having 3 to 4 different cash games, especially on FanDuel, where it's like, Dak, D'Angelo, where Dak, Miller, where maybe Dak, Miller, D'Angelo. If you think you want to spend a little bit down a wide receiver, I'm not totally sure I'm going to go that direction, but I think that it is so close for us, and we're just again, sometimes we can get caught in this territory of, there's all these decisions. Well, we're actually only right now really deciding between like 3 or 4 running backs. So we're not deciding between all 30 that maybe are have a chance to do something in the game. It can sometimes seem like these decisions are wide, but not when you figure that other people are going to go into this staring at the whole list of running backs and wondering who to play and like talking themselves into Todd Gurley or even like guys like Devontae Freeman, David Johnson. Like, there's some big names that we're specifically not talking about for a reason.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Like, we don't think that these players are in the same, like Adrian Peterson. Like, there's a long list of guys we're specifically not mentioning. And when I've already eliminated all those other guys and now I'm just staring at 3 that I think are close, I'm totally fine mixing and matching them because I think, again, they could all be great. and in that case, you're probably just fine. Because I don't think you are too worried about ownership percentages on some of these guys, where if one of them were to just totally crush, you would be completely dusted if you didn't have them.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think you make a really, really good point, which is that when we're looking at lineup construction for week one, probably the bigger mistake to make is not to you know, mess up between Williams and Miller in the first week, it's probably to play Adrian Peterson over Antonio Brown.
Right, right.
Because it topples. And not to say that there aren't going to be cheap wide receivers who are going to have good weeks. There definitely will be. It just, you need to look yourself in the mirror and try to figure out if you think you're going to be the person who figures out who they are. Because that's really the much trickier piece. You know, if you're going to be taking someone outside the top 15 or so wide receiver, like down in that mid sixes to high, low sevens range, like a Willie Snead type or somebody who we like, by the way. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to go in that direction, if you want to compare just similarly priced guys, if you're going to look at Willie Snead compared to D'Angelo Williams or something, I think now hopefully you can think about those two situations and say, okay, you know, Williams is safer.
And I think that's
the Williams versus Amari Cooper at the exact same price.
And I think that's the position people are going to find themselves in, especially if they are spending down on quarterback. They're going to, maybe you're going to get, you know, called into some of these higher priced players, and you're going to believe some preseason hype on some of those cheaper guys. And really, the cheaper wide receivers are so speculative. I know guys like Tajay Sharp, Marvin Jones. I mean, yep, we're pretty high on Willie Snead. I think other people might be catching up on that as well. I mean, it's like, this isn't like a new thing. Like, we didn't discover the guy.
But broke the news.
Yeah, but like, people are definitely talking themselves into guys like that. And again, it's a little different on DraftKings, where you probably, yes, do need to start one of the, you almost definitely have to start
we're
one of those.
We're
going to
run out of money on DraftKings. You, yes, can't play Brown, Jones, and Hopkins all together on DraftKings.
No, and you're going to...
There's just not enough money.
So you are going to need to speculate on a wide receiver or maybe two. And at that point, guys like Sharp and Jones and Snead, guys like in that sub 5,000 or lower range,
yep,
do make sense to get in there, because you want to grab, you still want to be in a position where you're starting Antonio Brown and, you know, some of, right, those other guys that we discussed. So let's talk about some, you know, we talked a lot about those receivers. I'm not sure we totally need to break it down. We want to get on as many of the top guys as possible. Brown, Jones, Hopkins. We're a little more bullish on Beckham than other outfits might be. I've seen him show up on for some people. He's just one tick below that other group for us in terms of our
system.
I think
he's a tier below. I don't think, frankly, there's any question about it. Beckham gets his. I mean, the primary benefits Beckham gets are he's a much better yards per catch guy than, mm-hmm, that elite tier. You know, he had 15.1 yards per catch versus they were all clustered in that 13.5 to 13.8 range. But that just increases the, I mean, he just receives the ball way less, is targeted way less. So that just increases your variance. He's a great play, but if we're talking strictly cash games, yeah, I don't see why you don't just take the more safety in your life.
Well, you can just, and you just get Hopkins for just 500 to 700 less than him on both sites. So, or 500 or 700 less between FanDuel and DraftKings. I think that's the way to just go down off of ODB. So he's the one guy that I would put in that top tier that I'm just sort of leaving out. So I want to grab those three receivers. We mentioned some of the cheaper guys for receivers that I think you're going to need to sort of plug and play around on DraftKings. Again, our system is a little lower on Marvin Jones than some others. He is not a guy that's showing up. I do believe he will be a chalk play. He has been unbelievably touted across the industry. We walked through this on a earlier podcast to just say that is another example of where the preseason hype could definitely not live up to what actually happens, because they have Golden Tate in that lineup, and we have seen what happens when Calvin Johnson is not there and Golden Tate and Stafford are playing, and Tate was just really highly targeted. So
that's... Sure. Well, I think it's worth it, though, to go back down this path and compare it to the Lamar Miller thing, right? So, like, yeah, the Lions realize they're going to lose Megatron. They get a guy to fill into that wide receiver two role. Maybe they even see him as the bigger downfield threat and Tate as more as the possession guy. I'm not totally sure, because I'm not in that locker room, you know, or, mm-hmm, whatever, wherever they talk about these decisions, the tape room where they watch their tapes. But I think that the Marvin Jones thing, like, I mean, there's two major things we have to consider here, obviously, and this sort of goes without saying, but it's comparing the price to the projected performance. So it's worth pointing out that he's very cheap. You know, he's 4,600, yes, and I think a lot of people around DraftKings you're talking about in particular. So that's a very affordable price, and if you think it's just all upside from there because he's going to slide right into Tate's role last season, then fine. Okay, we're not arguing against that necessarily, that he's like unplayable or anything like that. But the bigger point is, like, just because a team says a guy looks good, you know, like, there's so many things. You know, we run into this, and we always call each other out. There are a few things that every team probably thinks about all the guys they start, right? So one is that the guy looks good. Of course they think a guy looks good. He's going to be the second best wide receiver on their whole team, which means he's probably one of the top 70 wide receivers in the whole world. So yeah, and chances are good, he's going to look pretty good, okay? And especially if he's a new guy they're going to be pleasantly surprised. And if not, he won't play. So the sheer fact that he's going to be a wide receiver too, that is a redundancy when we're talking about does he look good in camp or not. Ignore that stuff completely. I think you can look at preseason usage a little bit where Jones was, you know, average to below average, I guess, for wide receiver twos. I mean, certainly nothing that's going to sway you too far in that direction. And then the last piece, I think, is just, you know, being realistic about what it means. I think wide receiver is arguably the most complicated position to move into on a new team because you're running new routes, you're learning a new offense. And I mean, excepting quarterback, I'm talking more in the running back, wide receiver, tight end category. You know, it's just hard. There isn't a great track record of receivers moving to new teams and just plugging right in where the last guy left off, regardless of how talented they are. The list here is miles and miles long. Mike Wallace, Percy Harvin, you know, plenty of people who are actually excellent on a team go to a new team and aren't great. And Jones hasn't been excellent anywhere. So I don't know. I'm not over the moon.
He's a guy that I think will end up being a chalk play on DraftKings, where I'm just not positive as of right now he will come into our optimal lineups. We have him for somewhere in that 7.5 to 8.5 target range, which is nice for a wide receiver too. Like, that's a good number. That's about as bullish as I think really any wide receiver too. You can't give him X more targets than you can Golden Tate really at all. Like, you really shouldn't, because again, we've seen what Detroit is willing to do with Tate, where we just don't know with Jones. So this is another one where we stared at these numbers and just wondered, you know, where are we going to end up on Jones? And just right now, the number just doesn't end up being enough for him to get there. So again, this could change, as we start to look a little bit more, you know, if we're correct on it. We've done a lot of work here. I don't think we're done yet. You know, we're not done until 12:45 on Sunday, really. But I could see a situation where he's a really highly owned player and he might just not be in the lineups for us. But I don't know.
So I think it's worth then to dive into who will be, right? Yeah, I mentioned that Jones is cheap. He's very, very affordable. If you're not going to play him, it probably does behoove you to look at someone else in that cheap category. So, I threw the name out earlier, but Willie Snead is a guy. We might be the highest in the industry on him this week.
Maybe.
We're quite high on him. 15 projected points on DraftKings is a lot for a guy at $4,800. So Do you want to spell out the case for Willie Snead? Because you were kind of the guy in our team here who, you know, alerted the trends that were relevant there.
Snead's targets when you look at his overall season of targets, they look sort of underwhelming. The difference for him was when he started. when he was a starter last year, he was, I don't have this number exactly in front of me, but it was somewhere around 8 to 8.5 targets a game. If we figure that's around what Jones is going to get, then you have guys on DraftKings that are the same exact price, and you just have a New Orleans team that's expected to put up, you know, more points. I just don't know. There's no other way I can really put it. So that's kind of where we are with Snead.
Yeah, so just to put into context this 8.5 targets a game, because I think a lot of people, they understand on a high level that targets are really good, but don't really understand what that number means. 8 targets a game last season would have been 128 targets total, and that would have put him tied with Golden Tate for 21st in the NFL in terms of targets. So ahead of guys like Jeremy Maclin or Rob Gronkowski, you know, that means you're a highly, highly targeted player. The Saints pass the ball all the time. It's the highest overall total of the week. I think it's a phenomenal spot to grab Snead. And actually, it really reminds me of the D'Angelo Williams, Lamar Miller conversation. And I think that this one's a little bit maybe more clear cut just because wide receivers are so different than running backs. But, Marvin Jones is a guy. Detroit went out and got him. He's the guy in town. They have a lot of incentive to make it work. New situation, you know, some history of that wide receiver two slot being used. And then you have the Saints, who we just know how they use Willie Snead when he starts. You know, like, mm-hmm. We don't have to guess. We don't have to speculate. Things could change this year, but chances are good with a young player that they'll change in the direction for the good rather than for the bad. And so if you're looking for cash game purposes or big tournaments, frankly, if everyone's going to play Marvin Jones, you're probably not giving up too much equity by playing him as well. But I think that, for me, I don't see any reason to go away from Snead. Just seems plenty safe, plenty of upside on a team that loves to pass.
I will say this. Of any guy that we could just be making the biggest target change from week one to week two, Jones could be that guy, right? Like, so we could eat some crow here come week two on him and just be like, oof, he got 12K. I don't think it's going to happen, but of all the guy of everyone of anyone really that we've been staring at for wide receivers, he's the guy that I wouldn't be shocked if it was just the biggest change we make from week one to week two. I'm just not prepared to do it in the projections, and I think it's fine. Yeah. And I'm comfortable with the decision, and I'll let the cards fall where they may, and we might hear about
it.
I feel
that way about Snead too, frankly. We could change the targets on Snead as well. We're going to change the targets on so many guys, and that's the crazy thing about trying to play NFL in week one is that so much changes that the average fantasy player and even the expert level fantasy player, people who run sites about DFS, can't know. You know, like, we're not going to know anything until teams get out on the field and start throwing balls around and we see what they want to do. I mean, week one is going to provide us with a ton of insight, and unlike a lot of sports, like, that 1 week sample size will play a huge role in how we go forward. So that's why for me, I'm erring on the side of safety. That's why, especially if we were to go back to our FanDuel lineups, you get so much more safety out of speculative running back plays than out of speculative wide receiver plays. And Jones absolutely qualifies there. Would never touch him on FanDuel. Can understand it more on DraftKings, where you just can't get all the expensive guys. But
and I think he ends up being a chalkier player over there. The other guys that we mentioned that being in that range, Tajay Sharpe, again, totally speculative, but he's 3,000. You're not really losing a ton if you were to just go out and kind of not do that much. I think his ownership will be high enough, slash he's cheap enough that you're not taking a huge, huge risk with starting a guy like him over there. Let's just finish this off with tight ends, and we can maybe on Friday get back. We'll talk a little bit. We'll break down some games, and we can talk a little bit more about the defenses that you might want to look at when we're talking about the game by game breakdown. Who are, just mention a couple guys that are hot, coming in high in the system for us in tight ends.
Yeah, tight end's sort of a hot mess for the first week.
Sure.
We don't know how Gronk is going to pair up with Garoppolo, and there's he's a little dinged up as well. The two guys I think we've talked about the most in our private conversations, guys who are showing up in the system, are Gary Barnage, every, you know, a known quantity at this point. A little bit of uncertainty there because you got a new QB, but just a huge, huge targets magnet last season. Let me see. He was right around Gronk. He was ahead of Gronkowski, targeted more than Gronkowski last year, converted more catches per throw in his direction into targets, had a few, only received 13 yards per catch instead of 16 for Gronk. Big red zone target, just a great play all around. Still very, very affordable on both FanDuel and DraftKings. And then the other main guy, and this one is a little bit more off board and probably more of a GPP play, although maybe not if you account for price, was Dwayne Allen. He was a guy you kind of turned me on to, so why don't you give the case there?
Yeah, the Luck, when Luck was playing early in the season last year, Fleener was a guy that he did outlet to a little bit more than, you know, first of all, the Colts pass enough that really anybody in their passing offense is sort of on the or you can make a case for. Yep. Allen is at the price point. He's so cheap on DraftKings, 32, that yep. You're not really giving up much in the way of risk by playing him. And even honestly, at 55 on FanDuel, you can kind if you think he's going to be in that 5 to 6 target range, now that he is just the only pass catching tight end there, I think it's just fine to take the risk. I think other guys, people will look at guys like Jared Cook for Green Bay. That's another kind of unknownish quantity. You know, Witten. My goal here is to go cheap. I don't think you need to spend up into like that 6,500 for Delanie Walker territory. Definitely not for Gronk at 87. That's a total stay away. Even like Jordan Reed at 7,400 against the Steelers. I just don't know. No. It's just not enticing to me. That is not where I want to spend my money at all. So I'm focused on cheap and with some upside. Honestly, Cook falls into that territory because he just is cheap. Again, we're not really sure. My only concern with Barnage is that, yes, he was really great last year. He's getting a much less accurate quarterback in RG3 than McCown. Like McCown, for all as bad as the Browns were, McCown was like fine, like 64% completion percentage or something like that. Like,
yeah, it's really good.
It's just fine. That's good, right? And we just know that RG3 doesn't do that. And so that would be my only thing where we might be a little bullish on Barnage, though. He's not going to kill you on price. And he was, I think, overall second highest red zone target of anybody last year, wide receivers included. So,
and I think that's right. I do want to be careful here. I think that, you know, we haven't pointed out yet that tight end, I mean, we mentioned the CV of wide receivers, running backs, and quarterbacks to try to analyze their safety. Mm-hmm. Tight ends are by far the unsafest position. So yes. You get in this really interesting dance where obviously not all tight ends are created equally either. And so there's the high end guys like Barnage, Gronkowski, you know, Jordan Reed to a lesser degree, who do show up from week to week and generally, you know, produce a more safe outcome than a lot of their peers at the position. But then you're spending up at a more erratic position. Like Gronk is not even on the same planet as Antonio Brown, and you're going to pay a similar price for him. So it's this odd dance where you have to decide, like, do I want to, you know, because you mentioned Allen at like 5,400. I think you said on FanDuel, that's only, I think, 700 less than Barnage, 900 less than Barnage. So spending up and taking Barnage over a super speculative guy like Dwayne Allen is, I think it's more than justifiable for cash game purposes. I get the allure of Allen, but man, it would not, if he just goes out there and gets targeted twice, I would not be shocked. If Barnage is targeted twice, that would be like, you know, breaking news in the daily fantasy industry. So I would personally want to lean towards getting Barnage in there if I could make the money work. But yeah, I get why you just want to spend as little as possible and kind of escape the position cheaply as well. So yeah, I could go either way.
Yeah, that's mostly the point is don't overspend here at the position. You don't really want to get into that upper tier of guys. You definitely don't want to be spending, like, let's say, more on a tight end than you are on your receivers at this point. So I would use that as my litmus test just to start. Like, am I spending 87 on Gronk? No, please do not. If it means you're not starting like DeAndre Hopkins, like, don't.
Totally,
like,
fine rule for week one. And right. I should point out, in our system, this is actually super, super close. So at a 138.8 points is a lineup with, you know, a bunch of chalk plays. And then the last wide receiver slot is DeAndre Hopkins. And then you have Dwayne Allen. And then 138.7, so 0.1 points less, same exact plays, except you can trade Keenan Allen and Barnage for DeAndre Hopkins and Dwayne Allen. So that is razor thin, and it kind of, you know, it's almost a matter of taste at that point. Do you want the sure thing in Hopkins or the lesser known quantity in Allen, or the sure thing in Barnage and the lesser known tight end Allen on right. the other side. So yeah, that's a really close one for me, and I can't make my mind up on that here on Thursday. So,
and we'll be back again on Friday. We'll go a little more game by game. We'll talk about some defenses. Who cares about kicker? Just play somebody in a team with a high team, game with a high total. I don't really know how much to tell you about kicker.
I'm going to issue a no halftime challenge on Steve Hashka. So get ready.
Sweet. Good luck getting it picked up. And all right, so we'll be back again Friday. We'll talk more game by game. Enjoy the Thursday night football. Denver, Carolina should be good. I would not suggest playing anybody from that game. This is a game where you want to let other people get the money in on play. Players that they want to sweat. That.
Don't play anyone in this game tonight.
Yeah, no. Let other people, you know, get 10 or 15% ownership on some guys like Cam or, like, I don't know, God, Trevor Siemian, someone like that, Demaryius Thomas.
Throwing your money away. Right. Don't play anyone in this game.
Do not do it, but you can grab some, you can grab some EV on the idea that other people will, just for the sweat. DFSR.com/LAB gets you a free trial to all the numbers that we're referencing throughout this entire podcast. Everything we were saying is informed completely by the system that we've created, both through our projection system and the player lab that we have up on the site right now. It's free through the first week of football, $29.95 a month after that, and you're all set to go. Buddy, enjoy football tonight. I'll talk to you again tomorrow.
All right, buddy. See you.